Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And love letters, as you know, are, people talk about them as being a lost art, the lost art of writing love letters. And I just want to go on record as saying they are not a lost art at all. They are just in the hands of fewer of us. And everyone I talk to seems to have one lurking in his or her heart. And today we're going to talk to Mickey Smith. I met Mickey not too long ago because I needed somebody to teach me something having to do with the world of computers. And this man is one of the best teachers I have ever fallen into the hands of. I'm so grateful. And we were talking about his life, and he mentioned something about coming to San Francisco and as a single person, or actually, well, you can talk about it. And I thought, I wonder what that is like coming here. You didn't know anybody, right? Except the, okay. So talk about what that's like moving to San Francisco. Where did you start from?
Well, I actually started from Nashville. I was in Nashville for a very short period of time. And before that, I was in Indiana.
Why did you go to Nashville?
So I moved to Nashville with, at the time, with a girlfriend. So we moved. I was up in Northeast Indiana finishing up college.
Mm-hmm.
And right as I was finishing, I met this girl. And we decided, she was actually living in Nashville. And my sister was living down in Nashville as well. So I figured, well, so many coincidences, might as well just move down to Nashville and try it out. Worst case scenario, I can crash with my sister for a couple weeks. And one thing led to another, and we actually ended up spending the summer in San Jose, California.
And so that is a sudden difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
What brought that?
So, she was a nurse.
So
she always wanted to do a travel nurse assignment.
Oh.
But she had a son. So she figured with a son that made it a lot more challenging, and as I was in between jobs anyways, I could look after a kid, because I did that in Europe, and in Germany on and off for 3 years.
So you were with her for a long time?
2 years total.
Okay.
Yeah, it was one of those quick decisions to go to move in together in Nashville. We had been dating for 2 months at the time, and then moved down. Yeah, started making arrangements for a new apartment down in Nashville.
And so how did you end up coming to San Francisco?
So then we did the summer down in San Jose and fell in love with California. We went to all the national parks and decided, okay, California is really the place we ought to be.
from just what you'd heard or what you'd seen, I'm always curious why people come here.
Ironically, I came here because...
Or come anywhere.
Because actually in Indiana, we get more of the impression of Southern California, lots of strip malls, and I had spent some
time that's
in,
what it, yeah.
Yeah. So we were thinking NorCal would be about the same, and I had no interest in doing that, but I figured people tend to like it, seem to like it out here for some reason, so why not spend a summer just to see what it's like and see what the draw is. And when we got here, especially to NorCal.
So you came here with her?
Different. Yep, her.
Okay, so then what happened?
So we went down to, after going down to San Jose and then doing road trip back to Nashville, her son was diagnosed with oppositional defiance disorder.
What is that?
And, basically, that means that regardless of what he wanted, if you gave him an order, he would say, no, I'm not going to do it.
And that's not just being a kid?
It's maybe, I don't know, it's an interesting diagnosis, which there's a lot of conversations about, but I would experience that beyond being a kid. If you'd say, pick up that $1,000, put it in your pocket, and then walk to the store and buy whatever you want. If you said it in that tone, he would say, no, I'm not going to do it, and you can't make me. Where conversely, if you said, I bet you can't make your bed. I bet you can't do it in 5 minutes. Then he would scurry and go do it and pay no heed whether he's being tricked or not.
And so what I know this is off the track of you and your life, but what makes somebody go for a diagnosis when a child does that instead of saying he's strong-minded and who wants to be told what to do anyway?
Yeah, this is actually a fascinating conversation. This is something that I'm working towards quite a bit.
Oh, good. Okay.
Is understanding the difference. Do we need a diagnosis to work with someone, or can we just figure out if we can work with people as people and adjust? So with him, for example, it came to needing some extra help because in kindergarten, when we went back to Nashville, he started kindergarten, mm-hmm. and a few months in, he started getting suspended for doing the wiggle dance too vigorously.
Now, what is the wiggle dance? I mean, is that something blatantly sexual that he would know about, or something he did that the administration...
Oh, yeah, no, it wasn't sexual at all. They would just be shaking their, like, dancing on the carpet and getting the sillies out type of thing.
Uh-huh, okay, so and still hard to function around.
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. So, basically, at that point, we were kind of like, okay, we need to help him figure out how to work better in the school system, which is... Interesting enough, now I think, looking back, is why aren't school systems trying to better figure out how do we work with this individual, with this person,
and not... Oh, instead of going to the parent and saying, you have a problem, you get it, is that what the... Uh-huh.
Or even just the...
So student. What's drawing you to this? I mean, you're involved, your work is mm-hmm. high tech, right? Your work is...
I would say my work is with people. That's my passion.
Okay, because you're so good at it. I mean, you certainly were. I could see that. I thought it was teaching that you were brilliant at, but apparently, what?
I love working with people. I love, from listening to your show actually a few times, I love getting to know people's stories and getting to know people's perspectives. I think that regardless of who you're working with, they can be an extremely challenging person. And what I like to challenge myself with a challenging person is to understand where are they coming from? Mm-hmm. Why are they presenting themselves so challenged as such a challenging person?
And so does this mean that you'll go back for training in some field so you can do this? Or you're just interested in it and wherever it is now?
A combination. I want to take it into whatever I continue on with. Right now, I'm looking at continuing on with education.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I could, obviously, yes.
Yeah, and I think I would want to bring it more towards the field of helping people learn to work with people and doing that.
You're particularly good at understanding what a person's question is.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so go back to, all right, you've come to Northern California, mm-hmm. and then I think we were talking about, like, how old were you?
That would have been, I believe, 25. I have a talent for forgetting my own age.
That's okay. So how do you get established in a city? Talk about dating. Mm-hmm. You were talking about your cousin, and she has a blog on dating. But talk about you.
Yeah, okay. So so basically moved out here with my now ex-girlfriend, and it turned out not to work out.
Was that okay with each of you?
Was,
oh, okay.
For me, it was more than okay. It was a very challenging situation, moving out to San Francisco with a kid and just figuring out, maybe like as a family unit, how that was going to work. And so she kind of decided that it wasn't the best relationship for her. Mm-hmm. And it was an interesting situation because... Prior to me dating her, everyone knew me to be gay.
And actually, I'm sorry, say that again?
So prior to dating her, everyone knew me
Oh,
so everyone just thought of me as just being gay.
Uh-huh. But you didn't?
I do, actually. I still continue. Like, even kind of, I was drawn to her because of her sense of spirit. And we can do this. Like, we could do this. Yeah. And so I would be brainstorming different ideas of things that we could be doing.
Love is love, and it doesn't have a definition for the object.
Yeah, exactly.
I can understand that.
Yeah. And it was, I think for both of us, it was a really exciting partnership to begin with. And then I think we both realized that it was a partnership not necessarily of forever, mm-hmm. which is perfectly fine.
Yes. Yeah. And so where does that leave you now in terms of your life and relationships? And
So it's been a couple of years of dating and mm-hmm. meeting some fascinating people. I love San Francisco. San Francisco, I feel like it brings all of the most open-minded people, I feel like, are in San Francisco. So it's great. All different types of only guys that I've dated.
that makes sense to me now because when we were going through, I kind of flipped through my website mm-hmm. and from this talk show, and you stopped, and there was a picture of a guest of a couple of times ago, Ty Olson, and you kind of snapped onto that, and it was a picture of him. Mm-hmm. You recognized him. He had been riding the life cycle.
Yeah.
For AIDS from San Francisco to LA, and you had mentioned that you had actually met him. I mean, this is a little tiny. No, you met him. What was it? You each showed up at this wearing the same red strapless dress.
Yes. Yeah, so he actually...
Two people, by the way, that I know and that would not think that knew each other.
Yeah. This is quite... It was coincidence upon coincidence.
Wasn't
upon
that?
Coincidence.
Yeah.
Because he rode up next to me.
And you never met him before.
No.
And it turns out I know him.
Since, actually. We've talked to each other on Facebook.
Good.
But we haven't actually met since then. So he rides up next to me and he said, I'm going to push you off your bike. You're wearing the exact same dress as me.
And of course, my question is, that was such an unusual dress anyway.
Yeah.
Like the two of you would have bought this dress and worn it to the same thing is just... Yeah. So unusual.
Yeah, and then I didn't actually recognize him. What happened was I was went on a first bike ride, my first bike ride of the season, with a friend of mine, Joe, and he recognized, he said, hey, I was thumbing through your pictures, and I know the other person that was in that picture, and it's Ty. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I was listening to some of your shows, and then it came across Ty. He was...
the stranger who was wearing your dress.
Exactly. So at that point, I had to connect the dots and pursue that coincidence. I love coincidences and finding out.
I do, too. I mean, that was such a bizarre one. Well, they're all bizarre. I guess that's why they're called coincidences. So what is life continued for you in San Francisco? You say you've been dating and...
Dating, getting settled.
Is that hard to do?
Oh, dating is... I think that if you're happy with what you're doing and you're happy with yourself and always looking to improve, I think dating is it's quite easy.
Good.
Yeah, I love it. It's a chance to get to meet new people and network and new people to meet you. And
because people
out
talk about
the
awkwardness of a first date.
I love the awkwardness of a first date.
Good.
It's my favorite.
Talk about that. I think that would be encouraging to people who to be able to see it maybe a little differently.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, whether you're dating gay or straight, it's the same
agreed.
Kind of...
Oh, it's, yeah. It's exactly the same, especially with the onset of online dating.
Oh, and, there's a wrinkle.
Yeah, and you never know really what... you never know what you're really going to get into with online dating. That's why I would first suggest starting in a public place, certainly in case you don't know who you're meeting.
Oh, I see. You've met somebody online. Of course you want to be in a public place. You don't
invite
a stranger up to your apartment.
Yeah, exactly. Which certainly does happen.
So at what point do you get to do that? I mean, how long does it take to get to trust somebody that you've met online?
I believe
I sound so old, but I am.
Yeah, I think that I believe in my instincts. And I think that that's important to listen to your instincts. And, you know, if something's telling you to wait till you're alone with this person, definitely do that. But I always...
You've met nice people.
Yeah, I've met nice people. And I feel like... I can usually pick up off the bat if someone's trying to hide something or not. But, yeah, I would just say trust your instincts on that.
Now, how is your family with... I mean, obviously you have a nice family.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love my family.
So do you miss them?
Yeah, I also... So I love being in contact with my family. It's also sometimes really nice to... absence makes the heart grow fonder. So it's really exciting for me to be away from my family. And then when my family visits... 100% appreciate the time that I get to spend with them. My dad was actually just visiting.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Which was a great time. It's fun. I have 7 siblings.
Where are you in birth order?
I have 2 older and 5 younger. So actually, my little sister is on, she's on track to go to Rio for the Paralympics. So that's really exciting. So that's Lizzie Smith. And
what do your parents do?
My mom is working, she does photography, it's her passion. She actually, in the middle of me being in high school and 5 younger, she went back to university and studied photojournalism. And now she's working on photo editing right now.
For a magazine or a...
It's a portrait studio. And so she's...
Photo editing, that means like Photoshop?
Yeah, a lot of Photoshop, and then so when people get their portraits done, making sure that they look great. Mm-hmm. And my dad's also, so my dad is an entrepreneur, so he does all sorts of different projects. So growing up, he started a business, actually got hit pretty hard after September 11th. But it was really exciting, I think, growing up with both my parents setting great examples of, you know, go chase after what you want to do. There's no appropriate time to do something or inappropriate time to be doing something. as long as you're chasing what
so
you
So I have
to
a
do.
Question there. So you're talking about you come to San Francisco and there's so many just open-minded
yeah.
people here, but it sounds like you come from very open-minded people. I mean, there are open-minded people everywhere.
Oh, yeah. I would certainly agree with that. And, you know, I think that even just given time, I think people are open-minded. I think that people don't want to change their mind is what I...
Because the ripping is difficult.
Yeah, exactly. So I think trying to force someone to change their mind or be open-minded or change their opinion, I think that's never going to work out. I think that what I try to do is if someone doesn't accept our difference, for me to accept that difference and just try to continue to be a nice person and eventually...
Have you ever run into that?
Where I didn't feel like I was...
Where people... Yes, right. And that you felt in a better world you'd be able to change a person's mind? Or a person would think differently?
No. Well, I mean, the short answer is no.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that maybe at face value, sometimes it'd be easier if someone would agree with the way you're thinking. But I think that the first step in changing someone's mind is accepting where they are and not trying to force.
I'll say you're such a personable, lovable person. So you're probably not faced with people who are antagonistic towards you for any reason.
And, I wouldn't say that. I think everyone works with someone that's... I think sometimes people get irritated with me because I come off so happy-go-lucky.
Oh, a little too chipper for...
yeah.
I've been accused of that myself, yes.
Yeah. And I think that in those circumstances, I've always just given it time, and then people realize that I am being genuine. I think that the fear is, oh, you're so chipper, it's fake. You're just being fake or something, and I think given time...
There are temperaments. Sometimes people are really blessed with a good temperament.
Yeah, and I think that... I think also it's important to work towards that. Part of that is accepting.
Now, if you could change people's perceptions, as long as we're on that topic,
yeah,
what would they be? What things would you like to convince people to think differently about?
That things to accept negative happenings as being a positive, going towards a positive outcome. I can think of numerous, but this is one of my favorite activities, internal activities, is when something really bad happens. A great example is the AIDS life cycle. I say that,
by the way, to me that sounds like a whole bad experience because it's a bicycle ride for 450 miles. I don't know how people do that, but yes, go ahead. Sorry.
So, no, it was an amazing experience. I love doing things over and over and over again, and the mental clarity that comes from being active. The negative experience out of the AIDS life cycle was that I had this bike that I saved up for it, and I loved it. It was this gorgeous Masi cyclocross bike, and it was stolen.
Ooh.
Yeah. Imagine that, a stolen bike in the city. it was the first time I had ever left it.
You never recovered it?
2 hours. No, it hasn't been recovered yet. But it was an exercise of saying, okay, this is a really challenging circumstance, and it feels extremely negative, and it's easy to say. The number one response that I got from people after my bike was stolen is, people are awful.
Oh, I see.
That's not true. That's not true at all.
Right.
I don't... I imagine that person who stole my bike is probably in a challenging circumstance, or definitely wouldn't imagine that person came from a place of happiness when they decided to steal someone's bike. So I wouldn't want to blame them for that circumstance, but...
You are a nice person, yes.
But even more than that, even moving beyond what that person's circumstance was, because it's all speculation, how am I going to take that, my bike being stolen, and make that a positive experience?
So how did you do that?
At the end of it, I just kept repeating to myself, you know, something positive is going to come out of this. I'm not sure what it is. I used this opportunity to really publicize this idea of taking a negative experience and making it positive. And a couple months later, a lady that I worked with, a student of mine, she asked, So after that happened, I worked with you the day that your bike was stolen, and you said something positive was going to come out of it. What happened? So it really got me thinking. I created a whole flow chart.
Oh, good for you. What was it? What did it look like?
It started with the center of the flow chart was my bike being stolen, and then looking at all of the events that happened because of that, all the side effects.
What were they?
One of them was one of the guys I was dating at the time. He I was with him when my bike was stolen. And so from that experience, it kind of drew us to be a little bit closer. He had done Ironmans in the past. And so from hanging out with him, I felt more inspired to do a triathlon. And he pushed me actually to say, well, get a swimsuit. Well, let's go swimming. And so from there, I started swimming. And that was before Halloween. So I think that would have been before October even. So 4 or 5 months later, I'm still swimming almost 5 times a week. So I started swimming. That got me a lot closer to my little sister, who's the professional
swimmer. Oh, my goodness,
swimmer.
This is wonderful.
Yeah. That actually also helped, gave me something else to talk to my dad about, because my dad was my little sister's coach. So I was calling him, asking him for advice, reviewing different strategies, different techniques. I was quite frustrated. I love being active, and so riding my bike is something I do every day. Mm-hmm. So from there, I started running a lot because I was like, okay, I'm not going to get
bike.
Slowed down.
Yeah.
I had my my Apple Watch, and I could see my calorie burn not being the same, which isn't. It was just more of a sign of like, oh my, I'm not being as active because of the situation. And I really decided to fight to stay as active as I would be with or without a bike. And so I started running quite a bit more often, got my speed down to about 7 minute miles, and was posting that on Facebook. Some friends that I met through the AIDS life cycle, they saw that I was running more often and invited me to do a 10K run with them. And then I ran that 10K and I got my fastest speed that I've ever done before. Those guys that I ran with, Luke and Manny, they became really close friends of mine.
this is just unending.
Yeah, no, it's all of these things.
I don't know whether to laugh or to cry. I'm like on the verge of, this is exceptional.
Yeah,
all because your bike was stolen.
Yeah, exactly.
This horrible event that opened up endless new facets of you. So this is a matter of also, I wonder if people can learn this. Sure they could.
Oh, I
mean,
know.
I've just, well, there you go.
Yeah.
But you learned it because you saw it yourself or somebody taught it to you?
I mean,
it would be a wonderful thing to teach people in actual kind of groups.
Yeah.
Teach it because it's a matter of being very conscious and not getting stuck on the fact that your bike was stolen and people just stink. I mean, to look at the effect and the effect of that and the, that would be so worth a class in, I don't know where.
Yeah, that would be a great class. I don't know. Yeah, we're
I don't know if you that. Alan Klein, who was a guest here on Love Letters 3 times, teaches people how to laugh amid. That's his profession. He teaches people how to laugh amid profound crisis and loss. And it's a matter. I thought you would. And it's a matter of permission. Permission to think about it. You know.
Yeah.
This is cancer victims and people who have undergone. Surgeries and amputations and people who have lost everything financially and burn victims, permission to laugh amid crisis is a matter of learning how to see something different. You can. How can you laugh at a time like this? You most certainly can. The answer is you can.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is, yes, how do you see the beauty in your life when something icky has just happened?
Yeah.
And it looks like you've just got it all mapped out.
So
effortlessly.
Well, I wouldn't say effortlessly. As I said, I had learned this skill. And
well, where did you learn that?
From a bad breakup, actually. Which, so what happened was I'd been dating this guy for 2 years, and we lived together. And I actually initiated that breakup. I broke up with him, and... This was my first like heartbreak, real breakup, and so I was fighting to figure out okay where am I going next with this. I decided that my life with this guy wasn't what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, I'd been traveling a lot, so I decided okay I'm gonna force myself to travel, and it just seemed like things kept getting worse. I kept just being disappointed. It seemed like I was running away from situations than just coming upon worse situations. And I don't think things started really getting better until so I was in Spain. That was a disaster. I ended up coming back early. I was super depressed to be home for my, I think, 24th birthday back in the United States. I'd always done really exciting things for my birthday. I was just in small town Indiana. Looking back on it, I think that I realized how negative of a space my mind was in.
Mm-hmm.
And just recognizing the choices that we make. And
but what did you see from that started you to say, you know, from this breakup, I ended up doing such and such, and that led to such. It's that led to, on the positive side, it's just the miracle work.
I think allowing myself to be lost.
Uh-huh, okay.
Yeah, and it was a quite a bit, and I think that's why I ended up, one of my motivations of starting to date a girl again, even though I, in my head, was like, well, I'm gay, really allowing just new experiences to take place, and having some patience.
Okay, so that's what I was saying before. You're just an exceptionally conscious human being. That's helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think being conscious of being open to new opportunities.
I have a question. Okay, so because I am a little bit focused on love letters.
Uh-huh.
If you were to write a love letter right now, who would it be to? I know if I were you, who would it be to? Who would it be to?
It would be actually to my ex-boyfriend, Portly. I learned so much out of that opportunity.
Have you ever done this and written to him? And that's a beautiful letter to write.
Yeah.
I hope you do.
I reached out to him a couple times. I'm not sure if he's using the same email or not.
Oh, you've emailed him. Okay, I'm thinking. That's wonderful,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
I love email. But what about a letter in your own handwriting he can just have forever, and you know, eventually the emails, unless you print them out on good paper, technology changes. I don't have to tell you.
Yeah.
You know how quickly the new becomes primitive and defunct in your own handwriting.
Yeah.
What I was thinking also? A letter to the bicycle thief. A thank you note to the bicycle thief.
Yeah. That's so funny that you say the bicycle thief. One of the reasons I was dead set on getting an Italian bike was because of the bicycle thief.
Right?
It comes full circle.
Okay, so you can include that. I think that would just be a marvelous piece of writing. Everything you just said. You know, how dear thief. I mean, I don't know what you would call him.
Yeah.
You know, after... Oh, yeah. That would be great.
Dear person who dabbled in thievery.
And you know what would be neat, I think? To send a copy of it to all the people that you got closer with because of this.
Oh, yeah.
Am I in just fairyland here or something?
No, I like that concept.
I do, too.
Yeah. I think that you're onto something there.
Because all these people, you know, you got closer with your little sister, and then your dad, and then the...
And I think that helps... I think that's a greater way of changing people's perspectives as well. Definitely. And the more and more I'm thinking about it, I think that takes me a second to digest and see where if you just send it to the bicycle thief, then, you know, maybe that changes that one person.
Well, if you can find him, by all means, send it to him. Yeah. Right.
I think there are a number of people hunting him down. But forgiveness is key, for sure.
But, you know, since you're such a conscious human being...
Thank you.
That, I think the lesson of that, I mean, for me, just having to listen to you, I just learned something in a direction I've never thought before about.
I think.
I think it's a real gift that you have to open up people's minds into thinking in new ways. I mean, you did it with me just in a classroom kind of setting.
Oh, awesome.
You're good at that.
Thanks, that's my goal. I feel like with every interaction, hopefully I'm opening people's minds to new opportunities and new ways of thinking.
If you write this letter, can I see a copy?
Of course.
Okay. Oh, I want to thank you for doing this with me. You are just such a treasure to talk to. Thank
you,
dear.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I'm going to say goodbye now, and maybe you'll come back someday and we'll talk about something else.
Yeah, I hope so.
And if you write that letter... tell me you're going to.
Okay, I will.
Okay, so maybe you'll come back and read it.
Yeah.
When you do, if you do someday.
Yeah,
okay, that would be great. So I just want to say, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, every day presents one, and writing a love letter really is a special occasion, and you can change perceptions and change people's lives, and you get to bathe in the positive. Thank you.
That.
Until next time,
Janet
Gallen saying goodbye, and Mickey Smith saying
goodbye.